This summer, Instacart presents famous summer flavors coming to your front door. Or pool. Or hotel.
Your grocery delivery has arrived, sir.
That was faster than room service.
No violins in the lobby.
Oh, seriously? Anyway, sit back, relax, and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Starring your favorite snacks, drinks, and more. Download Instacart for free delivery on your first three orders. Rated H for hungry audiences. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Excludes restaurants. Additional terms and fees apply.
I'm Ryan Grimm. Welcome back to Deconstructed. First, some rather important programming announcements. I am no longer at The Intercept. Jeremy Scahill and I, along with our former editor Nausicaa Renner, have launched Dropsite, an independent nonprofit news outlet. We're publishing over at dropsitenews.com, and we're also sending our stories out by email. You can sign up to get them at, again, dropsitenews.com. Our journalism will always remain free, but if you can help out, please do that at donate.dropsitenews.com. Contributions to Dropsite are tax deductible. If you need any information on that, you can email majorgiving@dropsitenews.com. I'm also going to continue hosting this podcast, and Jeremy will continue hosting Intercepted. You'll be able to listen to them the same way you have been. The transcripts will continue to be posted at The Intercept. Now, last year, one of our most popular episodes was with Democratic megadonor Dimitri Melhorn, who often sees the world quite differently than I do, but he doesn't mind mixing it up with people he disagrees with. Well, he now finds himself disagreeing with far more people than just me, and he's become one of the few Democratic power brokers making an ardent case behind the scenes on behalf of Joe Biden's viability in the presidential election. We spoke for an hour over the weekend when the entire world was pretty convinced Biden was done for, but Dimitri was sticking by him. Biden no longer looks like he's certain to drop out, though the situation remains quite fluid. Agree with him or not, Dimitri is often as provocative as he is powerful. Here's our conversation. All right, I am pleased to be joined today by Dimitri Melhorn, who goes by the one name of Dimitri in Democratic circles. If you talk to the kind of DC funder or operative class, they're just one Dimitri. Dimitri says this, Dimitri thinks this. Dimitri, you were in the news recently. I think it was Fox News or somebody was reporting that you were saying privately, correct me if I'm getting the paraphrase wrong here, Biden's corpse would be more popular than Kamala nationally. Fox News is not always the most reliable source of information, but just give me a general kind of overview of your take on where we are right now post George Stephanopoulos Biden interview.
All right. I'm happy to answer that question, but you asked a couple, so let me answer the little one and the big one. The little one is about what I said about the president and vice president, and I just wanted to let you know that quote was taken out of context. I did say that, but it was in a donor call. It was a donor call that had been scheduled to last an hour, where this conversation was happening. And I was trying to make the point that Biden has a particular brand superpower that happens to be kryptonite to Trump. And that may be more important than age concerns in an environment where the other party is trying to smear our people. So I was trying to make the point through example, and then one of the donors on this very large call shared it with someone at Semaphore. And so, of course, that's the quote. And so the reason I was on Fox and Friends is because they saw that quote. And I think they sensed that they had, another Mark Penn type on their hands who would come on the show and sort of privately acknowledge how terrible both the president and vice president are. And when I wasn't doing that, that interview got cut short pretty quick.
You went on and called Trump out directly on Fox, and it seemed like they were not here for that.
They were not. So, but the funny thing, Ryan, is right before I came on, they had been having a conversation about the way in which the mainstream left of center press had handled Biden's age, and they were so angry. And the arguments that they were making sounded very much like the arguments that journalists might make about how important it is to tell the truth to your audience.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, and so the Fox host was like, I mean, do you really think he can do it? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I'm not talking about age. I'm talking about mental acuity. And my answer is, yeah, one of those candidates has lost the ability to distinguish between fact and fiction. It is not my guy. And so that was the end of that interview.
So the bigger question, where are you now on Biden and his path forward?
Broadly, that debate and everything since then has hurt. But it has hurt. It has hurt in a lot of emotional ways and a lot of other ways. The disagreement that Reed and I have with everyone else is how much it hurt relative to all the other bad things that are happening. So as far as we can tell, our best guess is that that debate moved the polls away from Biden by about 3 points, which in an election this close is devastating. And Trump's odds of being reelected are now as high as they've been since mid-2020, you know, up in the mid-60s in terms of likelihood of getting reelected, like 2-to-1 odds. And Ryan, you know me well enough to know what I would give to move those odds that much in the other direction, right? I mean, that's a lot. Also, 2 to 3 points and 10 to 15 points of likelihood are the range that this race has been in for the past 2 years. And when you start to unpack it, you realize that that is the nature of these two men. Each of them is going to be revealing new things about themselves that the public wasn't really clued in on. And each time that happens, it is likely to move things away from them. And the difference that Reed and I have with everybody else is that we still think that the fundamental choice facing the American public, and this is both in terms of serving as president and in terms of running, the choice is between Yoda and Jabba the Hutt. And America will choose even any version of Yoda over the best version of Jabba the Hutt, because if there's a 3 a.m. call and Joe Biden is disoriented, he will gather his team and they will make a good decision. Whereas if there's a 3 a.m. call that wakes up Trump in 2027, it's possible he will invade a country. So
that assumes a race in November in which you've got, you know, Trump on the ticket for Republicans, Biden on the ticket for Democrats. And I think you're right. Most people listening to this show would say, yeah, in that scenario, yes. All right. Biden it is. I'm not what we want him about, but we don't like Trump. We don't think Biden's even necessarily going to survive the next 4 terms, but it's better that he beat Trump.
4 years. It's Trump that it's the 4 terms.
Right. So, but at the same time, we're not necessarily wedded to that. So that's where I wedded to those two options. So that's why I wanted to hear your analysis of why you think Biden has this super ability to connect with voters such that he serves as this kryptonite to Trump in such a way that it's worth the points that are getting knocked off on him on a regular basis. It's worth even, like you said, not necessarily having somebody who's able to orient himself at 3 a.m. and make a call, because he has these particular virtues that are so impressive that there's nobody that could come in and step in for him. Because that seems to be your fear. Correct me if I'm wrong, that you're a pragmatic person who wants to beat Trump. Like, if you thought that there was somebody who could take Biden's place and beat Trump, I would assume you'd be for that. This is not some like diehard sympathy for Biden himself. So what is it about Biden, from your perspective, that makes him such a unique figure worth rallying around despite everything we're seeing?
Yeah. And all of your assumptions about my point of view are correct, except one. I'm not conceding he would be disoriented. I'm saying, even if you think that. So there's a variety of reasons why I think actually he'll continue to be a great president as he currently is, as he's been for the past 4 years. But that's not your question right now. For your question right now, let me ask you something. Have you sorted out in your head the efforts that have been made, like the quantum of efforts that have been made to paint Joe Biden as corrupt and criminal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I co-host this show Counterpoints with a conservative host. And so I'm like constantly seeing all of the different right-wing activity.
So you see all that?
Yeah, I've been seeing since the original campaign.
100%.
Hunter Biden, China Joe.
Since before the original campaign.
All of the buzzwords that would be odd to people in Democratic circles, like I know you say Changzhou, I know what you're talking about. Like I know 100%. Romania, like I know
100%. And you said since the first campaign, and so you already clearly have a list, right? Mm-hmm. But it started before the first campaign. I mean, Donald Trump's first impeachment. I mean, Donald Trump used the power of the United States federal government and its foreign services to make sure, even before Biden declared that Biden was seen as corrupt. It's a lot.
Right. Yeah, and for people who don't remember, like it was a guy named Volodymyr Zelensky, who nobody had heard of at that point, who Trump called and said, I need you to go on CNN and say that Joe Biden is corrupt. And if you do that, I'll send these weapons.
100%.
That Biden was the guy that Trump was trying to do that to.
Correct, before Biden had declared. So the other side, if you think about the amount of time and effort that Donald Trump personally and the United States federal government and Vladimir Putin personally and the Russian government and all of Fox News and all of the related Steve Bannon, and that's a lot, right? They have spent more money and effort trying to paint Joe Biden as corrupt than they've spent on anything else. By far, it's not close, right? Mm-hmm. So one thing to ask yourself is, why is that? Is it that they are not seeing how weak Biden is, and they are just making a catastrophic error in investment? Because that's possible, but it seems pretty unlikely. We are talking about the equivalent of literally billions of dollars designed to degrade Joe Biden's brand as honest, decent, and patriotic. Now, I believe I know why they think that's so important. This is a hypothesis, but my belief is that Donald Trump is what Madeleine Albright would call a fascist, meaning it doesn't really matter if you're left, right, theocratic, whatever, you're an authoritarian. Every fascist movement that I have studied, from the left or the right or otherwise, or religious, they start from a base of cleansing fire. All of the things that we are about to do are necessary to cleanse our society of its rot, right? It's always that kind of a frame. And every time a fascist succeeds, they are running against someone that they can smear as equally corrupt, or at least it's close. And so Trump's campaign from day one, in fact, like from the 1980s onwards, when he first was effectively running against Reagan, he's been running for president for decades. And it has always been that the system is rigged and corrupt, and he's at least honest about it, and he will do it on your behalf, right? That is his essential pitch. Well, and that, by the way, that basic pitch dispatched a long list of people who were great. DeSantis and Rubio and Hillary Clinton, and like, these are impressive people. It worked.
The center right and the center left are very vulnerable, especially as we've seen in Europe, to that charge.
100%. So then particularly against the Democrats, you know, in general, globally, it is always a campaign against the cities, the diversity of the cities, the elites, the cosmopolitan values. It is always that kind of campaign. And so in addition to painting him as corrupt, painting his adversaries as corrupt, Trump in the general election taps into the deep sort of white nationalist, Christian, rural theocracy that is, I don't know, a fifth of the electorate, right? And his particular, and it matters, right? Like, for example, white evangelical Christians, 85% for Trump in 2016, 80% for Trump in 2020. That's a huge difference, right? Mm-hmm. And so it matters if those groups are super fired up, and Trump is super firing them up by warning them about the threat of the urbane, anti-religious, et cetera, right? So then along comes this candidate. And again, Trump saw this early, like in 2017 is when he started using his powers to make sure that he damaged Biden in this way. Along comes a candidate who has this brand and is also branded as kind of centrist, kind of middle, Christian, white man. Like, Trump chokes on it. And so if you look at the perceptions of the genuine marginal voters and like the people who are really at the fringe and they perceive Biden, you can ask them a lot of things about Joe and they will say things that are not great. But that entire Trump brand campaign and Putin and everybody, the billion-dollar smear campaign, failed. And everybody else it's been run against, it succeeded. So the point that I make about Kamala and everything else and all the others is that, now, could someone else do that? Could a Michelle Obama or a Dwayne Johnson maybe have that? Sure. But those are not the options that are available. The options that are available are other politicians who, in a 3-4 year period of time, I'm so fired up about the bench, the 50-year-old Democrats who are leading around the country, very good. But in 120 days, with the influence that the right-wing disinformation ecosystem has, you know, if you did not like what happened to John Kerry in 2004, do not watch as your preferred candidate gets introduced to the American public. So I'm just saying,
let's actually even stipulate all that. And I think a lot of that is true. And I've watched the right have this apoplectic frustration with their inability to code Biden as left wing and a socialist as...
Or corrupt.
Or necessarily even corrupt.
I actually think corrupt is first and left is second. But yes, they're frustrated that they can't.
Throughout, especially Build Back Better and all the deficit spending and even the inflation, even with Biden saying a lot of the things that Bernie Sanders has said, even with Biden being, you know, probably the most populist, you know, domestic policy president since FDR, it just has not stuck because he just seems like Joe Biden, the centrist guy. And that has really frustrated Republicans. And I think that that's all great. But then Thursday happened. And it seems like Biden can't complete a thought, that he loses his train of thought very quickly. He can't separate out his words so that you can understand what he's saying. He confuses things. We don't even have to get into all of the different, you know, medical diagnosis and the requests for kind of neurological testing to get to a place where we say, all right, the American public by 70%+ thinks he's not fit for office anymore. And every day that he fights against that, the media is going to zero in on whatever his latest gaffe was. And that's going to kick off another couple days. And it's also going to overshadow everything else. Like you may have seen the North Carolina gubernatorial candidate.
Some folks need killing.
He said some people need killing, yeah. And that just gets washed aside because every Democratic member of Congress who now comes out and says Joe Biden needs to step aside is going to make news. Mark Warner gathering senators together, that's going to make news. And Biden is going to try this loop where he says, okay, well, I'm going to do a press conference next Thursday. And that will buy another week. And then that press conference, maybe it goes as poorly as the Stephanopoulos interview, but he doesn't like wander off stage. And so he says, well, in 3 weeks, I'm going to do this thing. And then eventually he says, well, it's August. And now he's polling at like the high 20s, low 30s. And while everything you said might have been true, age is a thing and it landed on Biden. And this is the situation we're in. And so are you just so pessimistic about being able to bring in any alternatives that you're like, we're just going to roll the dice here? Because it seems like the thing that Biden has is that this brand of honesty, which is the thing that you know, you're saying you need to combat fascism and fascism's ability to kind of equate all corruption and say I alone can fix it. It's hard for Biden to maintain that aura of honesty if people think he's lying about his ability to function.
Yeah. So you have summarized effectively the case, and it's a very real question. I'm trying to think of, there are so many embedded assumptions in there that that we question that I want to try to see what's the most useful. Let me say a few things. One question is, can Joe Biden be a good slash great president as he is now, as he will be in 4 years? And we believe, contra everyone, that actually he certainly can. And the reason we believe that is because of the nature of the job of president.
Mm-hmm. Staff, et cetera.
It's not just staff. It's to be in that role, you've got to have great leverage. And great leverage means an amazing network of relationships and people and deputies and foreign leaders who you can work with because they understand your values. And all of those things get better with age. The question is, I mean, in some cases, not in every case, but, you know, the Warren Buffett example, et cetera. So the question is Biden also suffering from age enough that that makes him worse? And that's the presidential question. And we can have a long, we can have a whole separate podcast on that. But the more important question is how these 5 million marginal voters in the swing states that I'm talking about will perceive it. Almost everything that you said is an argument that makes sense to people who are not in that category. The question is, remember, the convention will be over in about 50 days. About 30 days after that, we'll be in mid-September, and the actual 5 million will start paying attention. And then 40 days after that, we will have a result. And those 5 million voters are going to consume an enormous amount of information and disinformation about whomever. Let's assume that Biden were to choose to step down. It would be about Kamala. Like I said, I think she can prosecute that case and we will support her hard. But it's not guaranteed because that campaign has worked against everybody else prior to Joe. And so they will consume bits and pieces about Joe's age. They will also consume new information about Trump. And one of the, probably the biggest disagreement that Reid and I tend to have, and our team tends to have with folks that are making your argument, is the extent to which Biden's downsides are baked versus Trump's. We think, actually, that Biden's downsides, if you think about the 5 million marginal voters, Ryan, they overwhelmingly anchor their news in either TikTok, which is like 4-1 pro-Trump, or the Fox, Steve Bannon social media ecosystem, which is even worse. So my belief is those 5 million people already think Biden is like you are suggesting he is now proven to be.
Sure, I think you're right about that.
So, and then on the Trump side, people tend to say everything is baked in. And I think that is an understandable instinct. But really what we're saying is that we've seen this for so long and all of our friends have seen it for so long, what more can be said? And it turns out more can be said. The last time those 5 million voters seriously paid attention, yes, Joe Biden was younger. And also, Donald Trump had not launched a violent assault on the Capitol that broke his brain and destroyed his ability to distinguish truth from fiction. Also, last time they were looking, Donald Trump had never been convicted of anything. And now there's 4 unanimous juries and counting. And so my point is that we are going to get more and more information about how Donald Trump has lost it and how criminal he is. And that's new news. At the same time, we're contextualizing a bunch of other information about Biden and his team. At the same time, who knows what else is happening? That's a long time.
And so I think the error that you guys might be making, and let me frame it this way, might be rooted in both the success that you guys have had and also your kind of roots in Silicon Valley. And so, you know, you and Reid both have been able to identify what you guys perceive as the real reality, which you believe a lot of people are missing. And you've also been able to effectively over the years move hundreds of millions of dollars in different directions to kind of push people to see that reality with some success, some failures. And so I think that at this moment, you guys might be overestimating your control over reality, your ability to get people to see what you see, and that, in fact, it's over, that the world has decided, and whatever the world is, that this guy just isn't up for the job, and it's just going to get worse and worse and worse day after day after day, and that looking back and seeing your guys' ability to kind of shape reality in the past has convinced you that maybe you can shape it again this time in a smarter direction. When in fact, smarter thing might say, you know what, actually, we might be right here, but nobody is ever going to agree with us. And we are going to lose credibility making this argument, and we need to do something different. Now, I think that, and I've argued this, I think the different thing you should do is not anoint Kamala, because I think that's a disaster. I think she has to fight for it in what Jim Clyburn called a mini primary. And there are donors lining up, you've probably heard from them, willing to like back this idea of a mini primary. But before we get to that, what do you think of my psychologizing of what I think is the error that you guys are making at this moment of overestimating your ability to influence this?
I am so glad you asked that question. I'm surprised by it, but delighted to have the opportunity to talk about it because that is actually the thing I think about all of you.
I think we're being modest.
I don't think, like that's the thing. Like, if, like, Reed and I do not believe that we can move the odds as much as that debate did, right? We believe we have a little bit of influence. And because the stakes are so high, we're using all of it. And you are correct that it is very damaging to our credibility to take positions that all of our allies disagree with, right? And yet, you all think you can change people's minds. You have so much confidence that you can get Kristen Sinema to change. You can get Joe Manchin to change. You can just pressure them and they'll change. We can get Biden to change. We can get Kamala to not take it. And like, I don't know. I mean, I know who Biden is. I know he's grateful for our support, but I don't know that we're in the top 100 most influential people. Probably in the top 1,000, but like that, even that's questionable. I mean, and so we're trying to play the cards we're dealt. That's what we're trying to do. And we don't think we can make a huge difference, but we are trying to, like, guys, if this is the situation we're in, like, this is kind of a conversation, a little bit, this is a conversation we had about S1. Like, I agreed with S1 in March of 2021, and the fight was always over, okay, are we accepting reality or overestimating our own influence? And I was on the other side. I was like, guys, it's done. Move on. And I think that the cost of ignoring that reality, you know how I felt about, like, those 7 months of failure. And also, I know you're not sad to see Kyrsten Sinema leaving the party, but she and Manchin are shitting on it on the way out, and that does not help right now. And that is all a consequence of overestimating your ability to have influence. So you kind of have this perception that we think we're masters of the universe and can change everything. And, you know, on the contrary, like, we happen to be in a position where we are approaching this landscape of politics with a new set of lenses that gives us access to different insights that might be more relevant. And when we work through the game theory implied by that, we think the only thing we can do is increase the odds of Biden beating Trump. And one of the things that all of these conversations are doing is not talking about Donald Trump.
Right.
And you don't want to talk about Donald Trump because you feel like you've already said it a million times. And I get that. The problem is, now is exactly the time I need you talking about Donald Trump, if I'm right. So I know that I'm expending my credibility. Reed does too. If we were solving for our credibility in politics, we would be doing the exact opposite of what we're doing.
If you're taking care of a senior loved one, then you know it can be hard. Remember, it's okay to ask for help. There's a reason why 29 million families have turned to Care.com. Experienced senior caregivers can help with everything from meal prep to taking your loved one to doctor's appointments. And every caregiver you hire is background checked. So important for peace of mind. Find full-time, part-time, or even occasional help that fits your family's schedule and budget. Get the support you need with Care.com.
You've got enough on your plate. Mundane meals shouldn't be one of them. Get an endless variety of the freshest, best-tasting food from award-winning chefs delivered to your door with Cook Unity, all at a fraction of the cost and time you're spending now. Take a load off and leave your meal prep to Cook Unity. Affordable food crafted by award-winning chefs delivered straight to your door. Go to cookunity.com/podcast or enter code podcast before checkout for 50% off your first week.
Your sex life is important, but your schedule is busy. You don't have the time to go to a doctor's office to get treated for ED. Through Hims, you can get a personalized ED treatment without stepping foot outside your door. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments, all from the comfort of your couch. The process is simple and 100% online. No uncomfortable doctor's visits. Just answer a series of questions on their site and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if ED is getting you down, it's time to find the option that works for you. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/deconstructed. That's HIMS.com/deconstructed for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/deconstructed. The products mentioned are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
I started by saying you were overestimating your capacity. Now I think you're underestimating it. I think if you and Reid Hoffman came out, and you have a network of people as well that you know you can be influential around, if you came out and said, look, Jim Clyburn's right. Like, we need a mini primary. We have 6 weeks between now and August 19th. We can have two debates. We can captivate national attention. We have 3,900 delegates who are there because they love Joe Biden. These are rank and file, everyday party figures. These are not the kind of elites. There are super delegates and there are some elites, you know, mixed in there. But overall, I think people would be shocked to find like who these delegates actually are. Like, these are just regular people who are really active in Democratic Party politics. And it's obviously too late to do voting, but there would be relentless polling. And Democrats just want to beat Trump. And if by August 19th, you head into the convention and say, J.B. Pritzker is 3 points ahead of Trump and Whitmer is two points behind Trump, the delegates are probably going to say, you know what? Big J.B. is our guy. And maybe he's got some of that kryptonite, too, that works against Trump. And there just isn't time over the next 50, 60 days to nuke him with the amount of oppo that Republicans are going to come after. Like, they're going to try, but you can only do so much. There's only so much TikTok you can consume in a 24-hour period. People have tested it.
Have you tested it? Have you tried it?
I have deliberately stayed away from it because I can tell how addictive it is. Mm. Right now, I've heard a lot of Democrats say, look, the chance of Biden actually winning the election at this point is close to zero. And so we have nothing to lose. Anything above zero is worth trying. So let's try. And we get closer to zero every day that this goes on, whether we like it or not. So what's wrong with that analysis of it? And don't you think if you guys came out and endorsed that, it would like substantially move the needle internally? This is, and I say this after I just said you overrate your ability to have influence. So I understand that's incoherent.
No, it's not incoherent. It's just, it sounds like we just learned, we moved forward together. So you've blended a couple of different strands in your question, as you know, because you get into the substance of why it would be good as part of gaming out what would actually happen. But I want to just go a little bit deeper into the decision-making process of Joe Biden, right? Mm-hmm. Joe Biden is haunted by the fact that in 2016, he listened to these arguments. Mm-hmm. And he's right. We were all wrong. If he'd run in 2016, we would not be here. A lot of people, not us as much this time, but a lot of people made those same arguments to him in 2020. He stubbornly, stubbornly resisted all of them. And he saved us. I mean, it is very plausible, given how close that was, that anybody else, if our theory of Biden's brand is correct, that was it. So all of these arguments came at him in 16. He listened. The world suffered grievously. All of these arguments came at him in 2020. He refused to listen. The world benefited tremendously. America now has the strongest economy of the world. We are powering the world economy. We are leading the free world against Russian aggression because he refused to listen to these arguments. So right now, who is he going to listen to? I believe that fundamentally, he is going to listen to voters. And he's going to listen to the Democratic voters in particular. And the Democratic Party's voters, since mid-2020, there has never been any single person who has been anywhere close to as popular as Biden with Democrats. It's been the inverse on the other side. And people who are not, like, the choices in this country in this political system, the way democracy works in this country is that the two parties put forward their candidates. Those are the only chances to win. And they are put forward by the parties. And the parties are not most people, certainly not the swing. And the swing is left with the choices, and there's always a complaint. And so the question is there an argument for Joe Biden to step down? And the answer is, well, if he were to plummet in the polls, which would be the result if all these arguments are correct about how he's being perceived, that might change his mind. And at that point, we will be there to help with the transition. He hasn't plummeted. He's dropped in the averages by less than 3 points, which is the amount by which they moved in the other direction, or slightly less than actually, when Donald Trump was convicted of felonies. So we are going to get more and more evidence of Trump's criminality. At the same time, we're getting more and more evidence of Biden's physical aging. And you all assume that that is going to net out in a way that is going to be so obvious that you will persuade Joe Biden that this time you're all right and he's wrong, when the last couple of times it was catastrophically the reverse.
One thing that worries me is he told George Stephanopoulos that all the polls have him tied. And it made me wonder who's feeding him, who's briefing him on the polling. Will he actually see the numbers if they do collapse? But that aside.
No, that's actually important. Can we talk about that, or do you want to go to another one?
Yeah.
Because that one's important because, look, there were many, many, many times when I watch politicians that I'm backing say things that I hate. From the time I watched Mike Dukakis answer that question about Kitty Dukakis, right? It happens. And so there was a lot that Biden said that I did not like. But his answer about polling, I'm like, yeah, actually, everybody's wrong and Joe is right. The polls are tied. They are still within the margin of error. That's what matters at this stage.
Not all of them, for sure.
The aggregate, for sure.
I see.
Like New York Times over, but the weighted average. And look, you can disagree with a bunch of stuff about 538 and think that Nate Silver's new thing is better or whatever. But the one thing that I believe that 538 has cornered is the ability to evaluate pollsters. They go so hard at that, no one else is close. And they use that to weight the polls. And the average, right, it was Trump up about 2. Then there was a felony conviction, 34 actually. And as the public digested that, it went to Biden up about, you know, a little less than half a point. And now it's Trump by 2.5. And all of that remains within the margin of error of these polls. These two men have been tied in the 270 electoral vote battlegrounds. They have been within the margin of error since inception. And so when people are saying Joe's losing, and they've been saying that forever, I've been saying it's tied. And the reason it's tied is because Joe Biden has this brand advantage. That is why if you compare him to incumbents all over the world, he's actually less unpopular. So I've always said it was tied, and it's still roughly a jump ball. So that is one of the cases where, look, there were a lot of things Biden said that I did not like, but that was one of the ones where I actually think he's right, and you're all wrong.
So what would a plummet be? A drop versus a plummet.
Yeah, more than, yeah, it would be outside the range. It would be outside the margin of error. It'd be like 5 points and it would last a week or two. Five or more. I mean, but by the way, Ryan, the other side of it, just to set the presumption properly, if you guys are right, how much should the polls drop?
Hmm.
I mean, shouldn't they drop a lot? Shouldn't they drop more than 2.5 points? Shouldn't Trump's odds of winning be higher than 2-1 if you're so right?
I think you would need a more plugged in population to have swings bigger than we see, maybe.
More plugged in? I don't know, man. Like, it wasn't that long ago when George H.W. Bush had 90% approval ratings, and even George W. Bush was pretty high after September 11th, right? So it is not ancient history when Americans swung a lot. The reason they don't now, in my view, is negative partisanship.
Yeah.
And that goes both ways. Remember this, even as the donor class, Not me and Reid, obviously, but a lot of donors are freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
More small dollar fundraising to Joe Biden came in since that debate than ever before. Those 2 hours were their best 2 hours. Those 24 hours were their best 24 hours. These are indications that the other side is also true. And so my whole point is, on all of this, it seems to me, especially given the psychological history of Biden being right and us being wrong, like twice previously, catastrophically, and the way the polls are moving, the odds of him stepping down are very low. If things move a lot, I think he'll reconsider. That will be his decision. So if it's 90% likely that it's Biden and 10% likely that it's someone else, or well, even 80-20, even if it's just more likely than not, all of us need to be focused on attacking Trump, because Biden is going to make that decision in that way based on those factors that we don't control. And he may be right. So what are we doing?
At what point does the reality start to intervene and we say, you know what, horse race aside, numbers aside, all of the game theory aside, a president who said he needs to work less and he shouldn't do stuff after 8 p.m. and that we're not confident is up to it, is just not something that as a country we want. Like, we want people who would say, okay, we want him to beat Trump, but do we want him to be president? Like, do we actually have confidence in his ability to be president?
See, this is this is great. I'm glad you're raising this, because we talked at the outset that this was going to come up. And once you work through all the gaming and so forth that you and I have just discussed, you get to the fundamental of like, wait, can he be a good president, right? And so, Ryan, my question to you, what do you think the job of the president is? Because clearly you seem to think it includes working super long hours, and I don't think the president is necessarily an investment banking associate, so.
I divide it into two things. One is making hard decisions, because the reason a decision gets to a president is because it's a difficult one, and his massive apparatus that's underneath him could not answer that question. That maybe you can do between 10 and 4.
No. Biden is not saying he won't take calls.
But there's that, and then there's also, but then this is the second part of being president, communicating to the American people and persuading them of your vision.
I agree with both of those. So let's go into those. Okay. So.
And actually, the international public, I should put the international public in there too.
Yeah. 100%. Absolutely. Okay. The president has to be able to make tough decisions and communicate them in a way that is consistent so that everybody understands, right?
Yeah.
My contention is that Joe Biden is as good or better on those two things than anybody else. And it's not getting worse as he's getting older. The way in which he makes decisions is with his close team. He is the leader of a council. He is the leader of the Council of Elders at the center of a network of decision-making. And he has been working too hard. He's been working too hard if he was 50. And when you're older, you need to ease up a little bit. And he's got the leverage to do it. He's just working too hard. That doesn't mean he's not available at all. If you need him, you can call him, but like, he's working too hard. But his process of making decisions is one that seems pretty good. And the second thing about communicating, if you are clear in your values and you've recruited a network of people who embody those values, when you do make those decisions, they pulse out effectively. Now, I've just made two contentions that you don't agree with, and I understand that. My two contentions are that Joe Biden's decision-making process is really good and that his ability to implement and communicate and effectuate those decisions is really good. And you disagree. So the next question, Ryan, is how do we look at the world and determine from the evidence without our bubbles, outside of our bubbles, how do we look at the evidence and determine outside of our bubbles what's really true? And I think the best possible evidence is how good of a job is Biden doing at presidenting today? So let's look at the international leaders. International leaders call Biden personally when they need help. That is why he travels to war zones. They want him personally. Look at domestic negotiations in the Senate. When they have a logjam, they call him personally. And if you think that like the left has been hiding Biden's inability to do that well, Kevin McCarthy was caught saying against interest, that actually that's not the case, that when Joe Biden is embedded within his team and intervenes in those places, he is the closer. And everybody knows it. The international community calls him, the leaders call him. And America is doing really well. We have the strongest economy in the world by far. And America is once again the leader of the free world. Something that was not, like, we almost lost in just 4 years under Trump. We are back. And all of that is true right now. So that seems to me a pretty good evidence base that maybe my point of view might be right and yours might be wrong.
It seems that the candidates who are running for office around the country, a lot of them at least, seem to think you're wrong and seem to think that at least from their perspective as kind of cynical electoral operators, that Biden is now a drag on their electability. Angie Craig in a swing district, you know, representative from Houston, became, you know, one of the most recent to come out and say he should step aside. Can you really go forward with so many elected Democrats telling the public that their candidate should drop out?
I am not saying that electeds are always cynical or that people running for office are always cynical, right? There's a continuum between just being brutally cynical and just maybe having some motivated reasoning, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's also specific brass tacks, right? If frontline swing district candidates are talking about issues, I think it is very important that we take them seriously with how they want to frame things, for sure, because they're the ones who know what the swing voters are thinking. However, a president, a presidential nominee runs nationally, and it is almost always the case that there is some upside to locals distancing themselves from the nominee. That would certainly be true for any alternative to Biden as well. And it always happens. So I don't mind that. That doesn't bother me, but it's also not evidence that is relevant to any of the questions we've discussed, which are, can he be a great president? Is he already a great president? Can he be a winning nominee? Is he our best bet? None of that is influenced even by what electeds say about distancing themselves from Biden. That is just a different thing.
Let's talk about Cori Bush for a second. Last time we spoke, you were pretty excited about the possibility of being able to take her out, that she was kind of one of the proxies you saw for Democrats who make it harder for swing district Democrats to win because of her support for defunding the police. And
it was defund the police in particular. Bob Menendez and Cori Bush were my two biggest targets. So one down, one to go.
How is the Cori Bush race looking?
I think it's even. I mean, look.
How invested are you? What are you going to spend?
We're not going to spend anything new. Yeah, so look, you know, we support the mainstream Democrats, and we've supported some of the sort of centrist black organizations that are dissatisfied with Cori Bush, and we put resources into those. Wesley Bell, I really like him. I think he's very good, and I think that from the polls I've seen, it's about even now. She has a lot of loyalty and a lot of name recognition, but so does he. He actually has a pretty good brand. And, you know, I think the race is pulling into a tie. And I think there's a very good shot that Wesley Bell wins, which would be great. And he's like, you wouldn't hate him.
We covered his initial race when he won as a progressive prosecutor.
Yeah, you would not hate him. He's just different from Bush on that thing that I think is important.
Yeah, and he also was running for Senate.
Against Josh Hawley.
Yeah, and saw an opportunity to take her out after October 7th.
Thank God. Yeah, look, I mean, Cori Bush took out, Clay Jr. So Cori Bush decided out of the woodworks to take him out because she believed that he was not the right fit. And Wesley Bell made the same decision rather than taking on Josh Hawley. And thank God it works both ways.
And did you say you're not putting more?
We've already put in a lot. Like, I've maxed out personally, and Reed has, and, you know, we've supported some of the groups that are active, but that is not our priority right now. Like,
do you have any guess what APAC Super PAC is going to spend there? Did you coordinate with them at all or no?
No, I don't. The mainstream Democrats that we work with have ties with APAC. We do not. We have real issues with APAC. You know, the stance they took vis-a-vis Netanyahu and Obama, horrible, horrible. So we don't work with them. However, they're clearly, you know, fighting, you know, every now and then someone you don't like is fighting the same enemy you are. What are you going to do?
So the headline here right now, you still think Biden is the best possible candidate to take on Trump, and that will remain the case in your view until or unless the polls plummet and he moves outside the margin of error. Is that about right? Or
well, so it's a good headline, but just to be a little bit more precise. Number one, yes, I believe Biden is still the best bet. Number two, I believe that Biden will choose to step down only if the polls move significantly for a couple of weeks, significantly meaning like 5 more points, stays there, et cetera. And even then, the only way that he will make that decision is with his close advisors, and that we will not have influence because of the history we've discussed. The third thing that we believe is, and again, this is just a normative statement, just a positive statement, not a normative statement. We believe that if it is not Biden, the confidence level that we have it's going to be Biden, whatever it is, call it 90%, 80, whatever. That is the level of confidence we have that if it's not Biden, it's Harris. And I do believe that Harris can prosecute the case. Remember in 2020, even as I was pushing Biden over Bernie, I was making a bunch of arguments about how if it is Bernie, here's the play and he could win. If it's Kamala, she could win. She's a prosecutor and he's a criminal. And if she picks the right running mate, like that's cool too. We'll go for that. But those are the choices.
You don't think a mini primary is a realistic possibility?
Yeah. So just to be clear, you said as Jim Clyburn advocated. Remember, Clyburn advocated it's Biden's decision. But no, I don't actually think that's realistic. Actually, sorry. It's not that it's not realistic. I think it might actually happen. I just think that the odds that someone other than Kamala winning that are close to zero.
A lot of them are so cowardly, they won't even run against Kamala, even in an open mini primary.
Maybe it's cowardly, maybe it's not. But like the cowardly thing is like, Brian, this is a little bit about picking your battles. And this is the same thing as the S1 debacle or whatever, disagreement. If you've lost, move on to the next fight, right? So like there's 2,000 delegates who've been pledged to Joe Biden. And even Black women who dislike the vice president go nuclear when people talk of passing them over, do not see how our coalition passes up a number two with her resume background and emerges better for it at the same time that the disinformation ecosystem is attacking us. I just don't see it. So if that's all true, then it's going to be Kamala. And if you game it out, then like, don't fight that fight. So I think that Kamala will win for all of those reasons if it's not Joe. And so it's Kamala or Joe. And either way, our job is to pay attention to the other guy who is worse.
One side point on that to me undermines the credibility of a lot of the people who are warning that Trump is going to usher in, you know, fascism and it'll be the last election, is that you have so many of these top tier Democratic candidates who presumably are very good political prognosticators, like a Newsom and a Whitmer and a Pritzker and all these others, who are clearly taking a dive for 2028. They're like, you know what, this is not my year. If they truly believed there would be no 2028 election and that 2024 is the last shot at an election, I suppose you could say that it's purely selfless and they understand that, you know, their running would make it less likely that Democrats win in the end in 2024. But all of the jockeying that I hear in the background from all of these camps who are very openly positioning themselves for 2028 undermines the idea that there won't be a 2028 election. You know what I mean?
I do. And I think that that is not a contradiction. I think it is a nuance that makes sense. So maybe there's a specific comment that I'm not thinking of, but people have varying degrees of confidence as to whether Trump will be able to end America's constitutional democracy. Will be able to, will, right? Mm-hmm. So I have very high confidence, right? Like, I think if you end that much power, that kind of a criminal in that kind of a setting, you don't get it back. And there's a ton of history on that. But a lot of people say otherwise, and America is super complicated. So some people say, well, the odds of America's constitutional order collapsing rise from 1% to 3%. So I've heard these Democratic politicians articulating a risk associated with Trump. But if it's just a risk, like if the odds of America's constitutional order ending rise from 2% to 4% or from 5% to 10%, like you still play the 90. If you believe, as Liz Cheney does and as I do, that the odds are way worse, then you don't. So that's, you know, I understand that it creates some brand conflict. But fundamentally, Ryan, I think that most people have less conviction than I do about how serious the risks are by a great deal. I am no longer seen as quite as insane as when I first started warning about this in 2016. I have more company, but people still think I'm exaggerating the threat. So mostly people are going to act as though it's not as big of a threat as I think it is, even if they're going to say any threat at all of that nature is unacceptable.
As always, Dimitri Mellhorn, thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.
That was Dimitri Mellhorn, and that's our show. Deconstructed is a production of DropSite. This episode was brought to you in part by a grant from The Intercept. The episode was produced by Laura Flynn. The show is mixed by William Stanton. The episode was transcribed by Leonardo Fireman. Our theme music was composed by Bart Warshaw. And I'm Ryan Grimm, co-founder of DropSite. Check us out at dropsitenews.com. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Deconstructed wherever you listen to podcasts. And please leave us a rating and a review. It helps people find the show. Also, check out our other podcast, Intercepted. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Let's talk about something that's not always top of mind, but still really important. Life insurance. Why? Because it offers financial protection for your loved ones and can help them pay for things like a mortgage, credit card debt. It can even help fund an education. And guess what? Life insurance is probably a lot more affordable than you think. In fact, most people think life insurance is 3 times more expensive than it is. So with State Farm Life Insurance, you can protect your loved ones without breaking the bank. Not sure where to start? State Farm has over 19,000 local agents that can help you choose an option to fit your needs and budget. Get started today and contact a State Farm agent or go to statefarm.com.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is back. Now through September 3rd, score up to 70% off everything home. Plus, end summer with can't-miss surprise flash deals. Because at Wayfair, new season means new savings. Like up to 70% off rugs, up to 50% off bedroom furniture, up to 60% off kitchen essentials, and up to 50% off dining furniture. All with fast shipping right to your doorstep. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 3rd for up to 70% off.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What does access mean?
Access means owning a home.
Access means growing my business.
Access means building generational wealth.
No matter your goals, U.S. Bank Access Commitment Programs and initiatives provide the tools and resources to help you reach them. Access your financial goals at usbank.com/access. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.